This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
We are confident that we have disrupted a plan by terrorists to cause untold death and destruction and to commit, quite frankly, mass murder. We believe that the terrorist aim was to smuggle explosives onto aeroplanes in hand luggage and to detonate these in flight. We also believe that the intended targets were flights from the United Kingdom to the United States of America.
The Deputy Commissioner of London's Metropolitan Police, Paul Stevenson, speaking at a news conference Thursday, British authorities announced the arrest of dozens of men believed to be involved in the plot to detonate explosives on transatlantic flights to the United States. U.S. Homeland Security has ratcheted up the threat level on passenger flights from Britain to the U.S. for the first time ever. Airports on both sides of the Atlantic have implemented new and stricter rules for carry-on luggage. Senior news analyst Dan Shore is on vacation, about to observe his 90th birthday. So, someone a little younger, NPR senior correspondent Juan Williams, joins us. Juan, thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Scott.
This plot, we are learning this morning, reportedly had some of the hallmarks of Al-Qaeda and some ties and some of the people who've been apprehended. What does the scope of these alleged plans say about the strength of Al-Qaeda 5 years after the 9/11 attacks?
It's funny, you know, U.S. intelligence here in Washington suggests that this is evidence of the new kind of Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda that has sort of metastasized, if you will, from a coherent group that has a hierarchical structure into one that creates cells on its own in sometimes unexpected places. Now, there is a connection, according to British intelligence, between what happened, if you recall, I think it was July 7th of 2005 when the bombings.
The London bombings, yeah.
Correct. And it essentially got a tip out of that circumstance where someone was suspicious of a neighbor, and that led them to begin this investigation. It's been going on since that time. Looking at the possibility of this probe. But what they found was a group of Pakistani-born immigrants who living in London who were going back to Pakistan, making arrangements and the like. And actually, the British wanted it to go on even longer, but then became fearful this week when they heard about a plan simply to go and see whether or not they could smuggle these liquids onto airplanes, and then thought, you know what, we better cut this off now.
This is one of the things that intelligence people urge us to understand, that the London bombings of a year ago that killed scores of people may have unwittingly provided the instrument, the tip, that leads to saving the lives of thousands of people and what might be one of the great intelligence feats of all time.
Exactly. So, you know, hats off to MI5. And then the odd part, of course, is then whether or not, how quickly was Homeland Security in the United States alerted in terms of taking action here? And I think lots of people thought that Homeland Security, Michael Chertoff, the secretary, this week seemed to be on top of the problem and seemed, you know, in charge, in contrast to what a lot of critics had to say in previous encounters.
Well, let me ask, because in previous encounters, of course, and I'm thinking back to a few weeks ago when the group in Miami, I believe they're near Miami, were apprehended with aspirations of bombing Sears Tower. There was a lot of skepticism as to whether or not those arrests were designed for publicity.
Well, and this time around, you have lots of people who wonder, especially after the elections this week, with Joe Lieberman losing to Ned Lamont and the war in Iraq being a central issue in that campaign, whether or not this was sort of something that was created conveniently to remind us all that we live in an age of terror. And people think, you know, the Republican Party, the Bush administration, has used that to their political advantage in the past. And it seemed a time to remind us all you know, that we have to make some decisions. Now, it's ironic because at this moment, Democrats seem to have ameliorated that advantage in the polls. American people do not necessarily see Republicans as more capable in terms of defending the country on terror, which has been their longstanding edge again over the Democrats.
And MI5 and British intelligence have a pretty nonpartisan character, don't they?
I would think so, but
I don't think they've chosen sides. We want to ask about Lebanon, obviously, because the UN Security Council adopted a resolution last night, drafted by France and the United States, calling for an end to hostilities between Israel and Lebanon. It calls for 15,000 UN peacekeeping troops and to assist perhaps an equal number from the Lebanese army. How is this plan going to work? How is it being received on both sides of the border?
Well, you know, the key thing here is that it's so fragile. It can easily be broken by any kind of hostility. And what Israel and the United States had wanted was an international, multinational peacekeeping force composed of, let's say, the Germans, the French, and others going in there and providing a real sizable, strong force. Instead, they're going to get the Lebanese army, which everyone says is weak at best and may, in fact, be infiltrated by Hezbollah. And then you're going to get the UN forces in there, and they have proved ineffective in the past. But you're going to get a lot of them, 15,000 plus the Lebanese army. And so the question is, how much are they going to be able to do to actually provide that buffer zone? As you know, the fighting goes on even as we speak in advance of the vote coming from the Israeli cabinet and from the Lebanese government. So I don't think there's very much optimism, and the U.S. and Israel felt that they were forced into this deal at this point because international opinion had turned against them.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of concern that this might not constitute any kind of permanent resolution of the problem so much as a way to stop the fighting for a few months.
And I think a way to try to turn public opinion again against Hezbollah from the U.S.-Israeli position and remind people that it was in the opinion of Israel, the opinion of the United States, Hezbollah that started this fighting. Mm-hmm. You'll see that in the UN document as well, Scott. But to say literally, let's see if we try, if Israel tries to stop the fighting, whether or not Hezbollah goes along or decides that they see an opportunity to continue to attack Israel. Mm-hmm.
Secretary of State Rice has played a very prominent role at the UN in brokering this agreement. Has she been the undisputed policy leader in the U.S. government on this?
I think George Bush has been the one who has stood between Israel and a very condemning world for the onslaught on Lebanon. But Condoleezza Rice, as Secretary of State, has been inside trying to struggle to put together the UN resolution. It was France that peeled away from Rice earlier this mm-hmm. week, and now France that has come back to Rice's side in terms of putting together this deal with the UN forces as opposed to the multinational force that we talked about earlier. So I think Rice has been one who's saying, you know what, we have to play a balancing act. She wants a deal, but in this case, she was willing to challenge Israel for the first time, say Israel has to exercise some restraint. And I think that was a different step, a different voice coming out this week.
Mm-hmm. Big primary elections this week. Senator Joe Lieberman was defeated by anti-war candidate Ned Lamont in the Connecticut Democratic Senate primary. Representative Cynthia McKinney lost her seat to a Democratic challenger in the Georgia primary. Obviously, both sides are spinning it as ever they want. What significance do you see?
There's a tremendous significance in terms of the power of the Iraq war as an issue going in both to these midterm elections and then to 2008 for the presidential race. Question is, how does it impact the Democrats? Is Al Gore going to be Hillary's Ned Lamont? Is he going to come out to her left? And how does Hillary or anybody else, John Kerry, John Edwards, play this game, given that they voted for the war resolution? Will the Democratic base, which is overwhelmingly now over 80% opposed to this war, be forgiving for anybody who's seeking that nomination?
And if Senator Lieberman wins as an independent,
it's possible, but there's a lot of pressure coming on him now from Democrats to say, if you have any loyalty, any love for this party, don't run as an independent. But so far, he isn't abiding by that advice.
We have run out of time to talk about the late Mike Douglas, but we have just enough time to mention, thank you, Juan Williams, and to mention you're the author of the new book, let me draw a breath, called Enough, The Phony Leader, Dead-End Movements, Culture of Failure That Are Undermining Black America, and What We Can Do About It.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks for being with us again, Juan.